If you can't wait a whole month for our next episode, you can join our Patreon membership for early releases and exclusive content for only $5 a month at patreon.com/transgenderschool.
And you can rent our 90-minute course, Transgender Allyship 101, where we reenact my coming out and teach you how to be a true ally to any trans person in your life at vimeo.com/ondemand/trans ally. Welcome to the Transgender School podcast, where we talk about diverse LGBTQ identities and experiences so that we can all be better allies and advocates.
I'm Bridget. My daughter Jackie came out as a transgender woman when she was 19. I was totally unprepared, but I've learned a lot since then.
When I came to terms with my identity, I realized that I needed to transition, but coming out was very stressful. Now I want to help other trans people navigate their own experiences.
This is episode 40 of the Transgender School podcast, and today we're going to be talking about transgender rights in Europe, especially in the United Kingdom, and we'll be covering what's happening there.
Thanks for that introduction. This is definitely not going to be a fun episode because, unfortunately, things are moving in the wrong direction, in our opinion. So for some context, last June, the publicly funded health service in England, the NHS, decided that it will no longer routinely offer puberty-blocking drugs to children at gender identity clinics. They said that more evidence is needed about the potential benefits and harms, and that, quote, outside of a research setting, puberty-suppressing hormones should not be routinely commissioned for children and adolescents. Now, this is obviously in contrast to the United States, where most major medical associations do recommend treating transgender youth with puberty blockers and, at an appropriate age, hormone replacement therapy. So it's interesting to see a good chunk of the United States, not all of the United States, as we talk about a lot, some states are moving the opposite direction, but a good chunk of the United States moving to give more rights to trans people and more access to healthcare to trans people and trans youth. And then the United Kingdom, on the other hand, moving in the opposite direction. It's unfortunate to see and really interesting. And because of the way healthcare works there, because it's nationalized, which a lot of us would like to see here in the US, unfortunately, that's a double-edged sword. That does mean that there's not a lot of options, at least not a lot of quote-unquote legitimate options outside of DIY hormones, which obviously come with their own risks, but a lot of trans people have to resort to. So I believe there was only one clinic in the UK that was actually even providing puberty-blocking hormones to transgender youth. They are no longer able to do that. So this is in addition to a really terrible experience that most trans adults have in the UK. There are really long waiting lists. There are really intense reviews that you have to go through that are much worse than anything that we have here in the United States.
Yeah. And even though we're seeing some similar, well, attempts and successful attempts, in some cases, things happening in the United States, one of the differences seems to be that in the United States, it's largely politicians pushing this anti-trans agenda. We've talked quite a bit about how that's often driven by the belief that there will be political gain for pushing the anti-trans agenda. But what's happening in the UK is more coming from doctors, medical professionals who are probably seen as very credible, saying that this is not worth what they claim are the risks. They can't support this kind of treatment for kids, which we know is very necessary from what we see and what we've seen people experience. So this is a significant difference and it's worth noting. What do you think about that, Jackie?
Yeah, I think it's tough because I'd be lying if I said that there was an abundance of research and that there were studies on studies on studies about trans people and hormones. But there's a reason that most of the medical establishment in the United States is in support of giving more access to healthcare for trans people, particularly gender affirming care. And that's because the evidence that is coming out is showing that it has a positive impact. So just to summarize at a super high level, some of the research that's out there with adults and transgender individuals at large, studies indicate there are significant improvements in psychological functioning as a result of hormone replacement therapy. That includes reduced depression and anxiety. And a systematic review found that transgender individuals experienced improvements in mental health and quality of life after starting hormone therapy. Research has also shown that trans individuals receiving testosterone reported lower levels of depression and anxiety, suggesting a positive effect. And studies also report that hormone therapy can lead to better social support and health-related quality of life, contributing further to mental well-being. The evidence is a little bit more sparse when it comes to youth, but there is still some studies that are showing us this is helpful. And there are not studies showing us that we should be moving in the opposite direction. And so that's where it gets really confusing. A lot of this argument about taking away access for youth is about a lack of evidence, but not saying there's evidence that it's harmful, not saying there's any evidence that what we're doing is bad in any way, just that, oh, well, we don't know this is working, so we should stop doing it. Now, there is some research that indicates that puberty blockers for transgender youth can cause a reduction in suicidality and an improvement in psychological functioning. There is evidence that the administration of puberty blockers allow for an exploration period without the distress of unwanted secondary sex characteristics, which contributes to improved affect, psychological functioning, and social life. And there is decreased gender dysphoria during adolescence, which is a really critical period of time emotionally and psychologically, and not having to experience that can go a long way. I can say personally, I didn't have access to puberty blockers. I wasn't out at that age, and going through puberty that I didn't identify with was a really distressing and not fun thing. And so my personal experience and my personal lived experience leads me to believe that this is something we should be giving people access to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I understand the need for more research. I'm all for that. Please continue to research this. But if we're taking away the right of medical professionals to provide these treatments and to do clinical trials, how are we supposed to find out more about the benefits? And I also want to say that just anecdotally, I understand this is just from my own personal experience, but having been now in many support groups, in person, online, virtual, read many books and studied this in depth, I can say that I've seen hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of cases where transgender youth have improved outcomes, absolutely improved mental health outcomes as a result of being put on puberty blockers and being able to access hormone replacement therapy when they are of age where that is what they have needed. And what I've seen in all of those cases is that it's not something that's done lightly. It's something that's done with deep consultation and care provided by multiple medical professionals, multiple mental health professionals, with parents involved and researching and studying and finding out all of the options and having a lot of conversations with their kids about the realities of what, yes, if there may be some side effects, we're not denying that, but when shouldn't it be up to the person with any medication, their potential side effects, the family, the person, and their parents to weigh those against the potential benefits, which I believe are quite significant benefits from all the many, many, many transgender youth that I've now known and been involved with and met and had the opportunity to see the results of this treatment with.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think this is one of those really tough issues where we, as people who are in this space having these conversations and who have lived experience with these issues, are so clear that anyone who expresses that they're trans should have access to the gender-affirming healthcare that they need. And that's so obvious to us, but to so many other people, it's not obvious. And I think that it's been really interesting to see the way the medical establishments in the UK and the US have diverged. And it's really unfortunate that they're at the place they're at. And I think that we are increasingly seeing, we're seeing this across Europe in different countries. We're seeing this in red states here in the United States that we talk about all the time are restricting access to transgender healthcare for adults and for youth. And so it's a really pivotal moment, and it's hard to say who's going to win this fight. And I think the unfortunate reality might just be that for the time being, there's a lot of different places in the world where you don't have access to the care that you need as a trans person, and that there's a limited number of places where you do. And so hopefully we're able to increase that number of places where people do have access to care. But unfortunately, it seems like there's a lot of fight ahead in the UK.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things to me is just reading through the articles and the things that you sent me, Jackie, is seeing the doctors repeatedly saying there just isn't enough evidence. There just aren't enough studies. And I get that. But at what point do we say, okay, how many more, I'm sorry, but young people do we have to see taking their own lives or suffering in excruciating pain through the anxiety and depression caused by gender dysphoria? And I feel like in some cases, the medical community overall, there's such a lean, in some cases, toward being so conservative about saying we can't use this treatment until we have all this mounds and mounds and mounds of evidence and the excruciating suffering that's happening, when ultimately, in due time, it absolutely is proven. And the people living with that, in that situation, whatever it is, can tell you that they would certainly choose the medication over not having the medication or the treatment, whatever it is. So it's really frustrating to see all these doctors saying, there's just no evidence, there's just no proof, we need more studies. And I think there have been lots of other historical situations where there was just wait and see, we'll do more studies. And how much loss of life and loss of quality of life has to be suffered in that process until these ultra-conservative medical people who think they know best for others about situations that they don't even know anybody in a lot of cases, I think, or know very few people who are actually experiencing this, are really holding back progress. And it makes me really frustrated and angry, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think it's important to emphasize that the harm here is really exaggerated. It doesn't really exist in the way that people who are trying to restrict access to care would lead you to believe it does. I'm just reading from the Mayo Clinic's website, obviously a highly respected medical institution here in the United States, and their website is very clear that puberty blockers don't cause permanent physical changes. I'm reading that verbatim from the website. Instead, they pause puberty. They offer a chance to explore gender identity and give youth and families time to plan for the psychological, medical, developmental, social, and legal issues that may lie ahead. And when a person stops taking these medications, puberty starts again. And so you would think that the people who say there's not enough research to know if we should let kids transition would like puberty blockers, because you can pause and you can buy some time and you can decide whether the kid is going to go through the puberty that they're naturally going through or whether they're going to transition and do hormone replacement therapy. It would seem like puberty blockers would be a good option, a good middle ground there. But unfortunately, that's not the case right now, at least not how they see it.
Yeah. And I think a good episode of ours to go back to would be episode 8, which was all about medical care for transgender youth with Dr. Johanna Olson Kennedy, who is considered one of the leading experts in the world, really, who we had the privilege of interviewing. And she said that exact same thing. And she cited more medical research. And I remember, I believe she said in that episode, but I've also heard her and other medical professionals say the puberty blockers have been being used forever for their kids who have, I think it's called precocious onset of puberty, early onset of puberty, and all kinds of other scenarios where these same medications are used for other conditions and have been proven in those cases to be absolutely safe and worth whatever potential risks are, or maybe not definitely are, but may potential risks that may exist are worth taking that chance because of the benefit of the medication for these many other cases. And they've been used, I believe, for decades for other conditions. So this idea that's being perpetuated, these are new, we don't know anything about them, they could harm our children, we can look to these other studies and ways that they've been used to show that that is not true, to discredit that false statement that I think is pervasive out there in this conversation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And now we're going to talk about some current events, or rather one current event that I found really entertaining, honestly. The Vatican, everyone's favorite institution, issued a new document last week approved by Pope Francis stating that the church believes that gender fluidity and transition surgery, as well as surrogacy, amount to affronts to human dignity. The sex a person is assigned at birth, the document argued, was a, quote, irrevocable gift from God, and any sex change intervention as a rule risks threatening the unique dignity the person has received from the moment of conception. People who desire, and this is my personal favorite part, people who desire, quote, a personal self-determination as gender theory prescribes, risk succumbing, quote, to the age-old temptation to make oneself God. And I mean, if I don't identify as a God, I don't know what else. But in all seriousness, I found this really entertaining. I mean, really unfortunate for Catholics out there. I know there are some LGBTQ Catholics and some Catholics who are supportive of LGBTQ people. And so I know this is a tough time to be a member of the church. But I don't know, as someone who went to a Catholic high school and has never been religious, I definitely find this very entertaining and really interesting that this comes after the Pope said that Catholic priests can bless gay couples. So I don't know what kind of weird power struggle is going on behind the scenes there, but I found that very interesting.
Oh my goodness. Well, yes, very interesting. And I had not heard that exact wording, which is really shocking to me and just so unimaginable to me how anyone could think that you, because you're being who you are and you're putting yourself in the world as you know yourself to be, that you're making yourself a God, that you're saying that you're God. That's pretty brutal and pretty inaccurate, untrue, just not even anywhere in the realm of reality. But Jackie, since you brought this up, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and that friend said that they were under the impression that the Pope now said it's perfectly fine to be gay and that priests can actually perform marriage ceremonies for gay people. Nope. And so I was like, no, I think unfortunately, well, we know that's absolutely not true. I think that that's a misperception that people have. So can you clarify that?
Yeah. So there's a big distinction here. The Pope said that Catholic priests can bless a gay couple, which, I mean, that's like saying, I hope you have a nice vacation. A blessing is not a formal ceremony. It's not one of the sacraments in the Catholic Church. It's not a wedding, for sure. Catholic priests are not allowed to marry gay couples. Gay couples are not allowed to get married in Catholic churches. That is still very much the case. And I think that that's why I was so surprised by this, because Francis, while he's obviously still a pope, he's definitely said things that have been homophobic and anti-trans and other things. He has generally tried to lean in the direction of treating people like human beings and sounding like he wants the church to be welcoming to more people. Definitely a departure from the Pope who came before him. And so it's interesting to see this come out. I think it's an unfortunate but important reminder that Catholic tradition is very baked in gender hierarchies. And this comes back to abortion and not allowing women to be priests. And there are a lot of levels on which gender is very integral to the power structures of Catholicism. And so it's unfortunate, not surprising to me as someone who, again, went to a Catholic high school where teachers and administrators were very openly homophobic. I see how this could be surprising to some people given the direction that this Pope has been moving and given the kind of game of telephone that happens, like you mentioned, Mom, where someone hears that priests can bless gay couples. And so they're like, oh, gay couples can get married in the Catholic Church and the Catholic Church is fine and they're no longer problematic. And Catholic Church will always be problematic, unfortunately.
Yeah. So why do you think, I'm curious, why do you think there's this discrepancy between what he and the church is saying about they can bless gay people?
Oh, gay couples.
Versus they can bless a gay couple, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. Versus if you're transgender, the wording that you shared earlier with regard to what Pope Francis said about gay people, that they're seeing themselves as God and that this awful sentiment that he stated, why the difference in the statements, which seem to be moving toward slightly more kindness and understanding of people based on sexuality, but not gender diversity and gender transition?
I think there's a misunderstanding here that people who are not as steeped in Christian or Catholic culture might miss. And I think that is that for a lot of conservative Christians, Catholics, they might have very genuine, very warm, very loving feelings toward people who they believe are going to hell for being gay or trans or having some other thing about them that they don't like. And so I think that to the Pope, this is probably entirely consistent. You can bless a gay couple. You could, he would probably say that you could bless a trans person, but you're blessing them with a desire that they move on from that, that they reform themselves, that they convert themselves into a straight person or a cis person, which obviously is not possible. It's the love the sinner, hate the sin kind of mentality. And this is something that I was taught very explicitly in high school. There's nothing wrong with being gay. There's something wrong with being in a gay relationship and getting mm-hmm. married to a person of the same sex. There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. with being trans. There's nothing wrong with experiencing gender dysphoria. There's something wrong with transitioning. And I think it all comes back to the idea that, you know, you have to have this omnipotent, omniscient, benevolent God. And God can't be all those three things in a world where bad things happen to people for no reason and where people don't identify with the gender that they were assigned. And so it may make sense. It's unfortunate, but it makes sense. And I think that the Catholic Church is very, very wedded to those beliefs. And I don't think that's ever going to go away. I think it's frankly just going to shrink and get smaller and smaller over time. And eventually it'll be a couple hundred dudes in the Vatican just doing their thing and everyone else will have moved on.
Well said. I agree. I do want to acknowledge again that I know lots of people, at least here in Southern California, do identify as Catholic or Christian and either LGBTQ plus themselves or LGBTQ plus affirming. So it's a really complicated, messy issue that is really hard to discuss because I don't want to turn anybody away if they're going to help or support in some way.
LGBTQ 100%.
Right.
And again, you know, it's such a mixed bag. There were teachers at my high school who said horrible things who I would never want to see again. And there are teachers who I am still in touch with who were great people and who really impacted my life in a really positive way. So that's not to judge individuals who are members of this church, definitely very much to judge the church and the institution and the leaders of that institution. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And statements like the statement just made by the Pope with the idea that you're making yourself into God and that it's an affront to the gift of God of your gender and just seems very cruel, harsh language that is not even in an attempt to, unlike the statement, oh, we can bless gay couples. This just seems a world away, even though it's all lip service. It's all not even lip service. It is negative about trans people, but it is just lip service to say, oh, we can bless gay couples. It all is non-affirming and it all is harmful and homophobic and transphobic. And it puts messages out into the world that then cause people who identify with those religions and others to take action that is harmful to trans people. So we want to make that very clear.
And if I thought I was God, I would try to do a lot more than just change my gender.
Good point. So it's pretty ridiculous. That's what the statement is. It's just utterly ridiculous and does not resonate in any way with, I would imagine, anybody of trans experience or anybody who knows and loves transgender people. It just seems absurd to say such a thing. And so that's my statement on it.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. See you on the next one.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening to our Transgender School podcast. We hope you learned something new and that you're inspired to learn more.
If you enjoyed our conversation, please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. And please be sure to check out our website, transgenderschool.org. You'll find many valuable resources there, including news about upcoming courses we'll be teaching.
Make sure to join us for future podcast episodes. We'll catch you on the first Tuesday of every month.